So the idea of him exploring is like, okay, how do you embrace this pathless path, which is not a rejection of the default path, but more of a way to transcend it.
Hey, friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. Today's conversation was with Paul Millard. Paul is currently writing and close to finishing up a new book called The Pathless Path, which details his journey from leaving a traditional job in consulting and going on a pathless path to some extent. And Paul has been writing about independent work, freelance work, knowledge work, and he details his whole process and how that's gone. He has led Curiosity Conversations, which is an open invitation to anyone to talk to him about careers or life. Paul thinks a lot about these types of topics that we've talked about on the show, and I really think you're going to like this conversation a lot. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which has the best insights from the podcast and FriendSource job opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Paul. Paul, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, David.
So I kind of had a tweet last night that went mini viral a little bit, and curious to hear a little bit more about this, the new independent strategy for people to develop a potential path. And I know paths will be a word that we'll talk about this episode a bunch of different times, the pathless path, et cetera. But I'm curious to hear a little bit more about a recent tweet around, go for it.
Yeah, so half joking, half true. I wrote, find a way to make some money to support your life, but not work too much. Use the extra time to hang out online and see what interesting things emerge. Step three, step four, enlightenment and profit. That's both a shout out to the underpants gnome meme from South Park, and also kind of a nod to something really interesting that's been happening. I quit my job in 2017. I had worked on the traditional success path in strategy consulting. I was doing all the right things, like could have gone after that upper middle class life and really been comfortable and done all the things that a lot of people like and want. Realized it wasn't for me. I left and I basically did step one. I did freelancing. And in that, I realized I needed much less money than I thought. I was very anchored to an idea of like, okay, I am worth X amount of salary. I need to replace that. What I discovered instead was I liked the time to read, to wander, to take bike rides, to explore, and basically to lean into life and explore, okay, what is life if you are not a worker? And in that, I keep running into really interesting things. I think pretty much all those explorations have led to what I'm doing now and why I'm optimistic about the future. So step four is really a joke around enlightenment and profit. It connects to this broader idea I write about, which is shifting away from the default path and embracing kind of this pathless path idea I've been exploring over the past year.
Yeah. And book is coming out end of this year, early 2022. And I don't want to put a date on it if you don't have to, but just plan it. Yeah.
I'm aiming for November. So we were joking before, you said you're a full stack podcast producer. I am a full stack book editor, writer, and publisher, and cover designer right now. So I'm figuring out everything. I love it. It's so fun. I've loved writing it so much. And I really have no goals for the book. Like, it's been such a, something that's really brought me alive, like getting better at writing and seeing how far I've come since when I started in January. It's like, oh my God, this is so cool. I am like so lucky that I'm living a life, where I'm able to design my life around doing things like this. Aiming for mid-November, but I am the only person to hold responsible if that doesn't happen.
Cool. Excited to check it out. And earlier you talked about just kind of a little bit around like designing your life around writing and how that also ties to your quality of life or happiness, et cetera, but then also a sense of optimism around the future and opportunities. Can you maybe dive into both of those parts a little bit more, Paul?
Yeah, so I think it connects to the ideas I'm writing about. So if we start with like the idea of the default path, right? And you're exploring this too and thinking about portfolio careers, that's an alternative story to this default path. Default path is basically a collection of stories. They vary, but they're all similar in many different countries around how we should live our life. Researchers call these cultural life scripts, and people are able to, people can repeat these like anywhere you go. People know these and can tell you what the goals are. The problem is it's a series of life events, mostly positive before the age of 35. And they're like single actions, like get a job. That is like one of the top 10 things that people list that is part of an ideal life. Okay, that is not going to get you too far if you get laid off from that job 10 months in. Then what, right? So the idea of him exploring is like, okay, how do you embrace this pathless path, which is not a rejection of the default path, but more of a way to transcend it. Because I think a lot of the issues with the way people talk about work is that it's a rejection of the status quo, right? So then people talk about, okay, how do you escape work? How do you change the way work exists, right? And what I'm much more curious about is like, how do we reclaim the definition of work, shift it from what can be paid for to the things we're drawn to, the things we can contribute, the things we might not get paid for, the things that bring us alive. And that's the thing I've really tried to design my life around, which is this broader meta search for the work, broader work of our lives, which is finding the work we actually want to do. Right. So I discovered I liked writing through a series of small experiments, and I kept making increasing commitments to the point now where I'm launching a book. And like, I'm pretty committed to the idea that I'll probably write for the next 30, 40, 50 years of my life. I love it. And then, so it's like, figure out who you are and then design your life around that boldly, which is not easy. And we can explore some of those things as well.
Yeah. And then going back to the indie strategy as well.
Yeah.
It seems like, well, I mean, I learned about you through your writing, and I'm just a small time guy, but it sounds like, publicly sharing your ideas and publicly writing like attracts people, and then opportunities are attracted or assigned or connected to people, et cetera. Maybe talk to us a little bit about, since writing, your newsletter and on Twitter a bunch, maybe be a little bit specific about potential, I don't want to say opportunities, but just projects, gigs, et cetera, that have kind of come maybe unexpectedly, or that you've seen patterns about them related through your writing journey.
Yeah, happy to share ideas. So I think the thing I've been leaning against is this draw towards very measurable outcomes, right? I think those are very useful at the beginning of a life and a beginning of a career, kind of to give you a direction when you have no idea what you're doing. However, over time, I basically call this the ambition trap. It shifts from this kind of like endless search for the next goal rather than focusing on what you're doing. So the thing I've really oriented around much more is David White. He's a poet. He writes about work. He talks about the conversational nature of reality, which is basically this like metaphorical, it's a little fluffy for some people, but it's this idea that there are these things you're exploring, right? It could be portfolio careers. It could be the things I'm writing about. And you're kind of like looking for entry points, both to put up digital signposts and say, hey, talk to me about these things. You're sending things out there with your writing. You're looking for in-person and local communities to engage with to bring that energy. And you're really pushing yourself at like the edge of the unknown and seeing what does that hold for you? What information, what insights does that give you such that you can either decide to expand that conversation, move it in a new direction or deepen it, right? Make deeper commitments. So writing has really been that way of like exploring this conversation. I just write about what I'm thinking about every week. Like I have grown the newsletter and I do note which topics resonate, but I don't overly cater to that, right? If I'm excited about something, I basically just write about it. And I don't really look at stats. I don't look at unsubscribes. I don't really pay too much attention. What I pay attention to is what shows up in my inbox. Like when I get an email from you and you're like, this rocks. I usually don't say, okay, great, thanks. I usually lean into those conversations. And for me, like, I want to make friends. Like, I want to be friends with you because you're excited about similar ideas. You're seeing things in a similar way. And it's like, okay, what are the possibilities for that, right? So when I'm talking about possibility, it's not just economic possibility. I think there's enormous economic possibility in the world if you're smart, curious, driven, and can use the internet. However, the social possibilities are what's really exciting now because for the first time after the pandemic, people are starting to reimagine this structuring of their life, which is really cool. Meeting people online first and then meeting them in person and where you live and where you work, how much you work. So that's kind of the broader conversation that excites me.
Okay. I dig it.
If I ask you, like, what's the conversation you're having with the world? Do you have an answer to that? Like, is there something that brings you alive?
What's the conversation that I'm having with the world? Conversations like this bring me alive. Conversations on, I think being in service kind of brings me alive. And I know that's a little kind of cliche or whatever, but to me, like helping people achieve whatever they're, and it can be really small, like, you know, where's the bus stop? Or it could be like, hey, I'm stuck in my job. How do I figure that out? And that could be a lot more meaningful. So those are the things that I like to think about. And whenever I feel stuck, I try to think about, well, how can I flip this around and be like, okay, my situation is small compared to a lot of other people. Is there one person that I could try to support? That's the stuff that I like. The part that about this idea of like connecting online and then in person, like I've been a big beneficiary and advocate of cohort-based courses. And that's been really cool of just getting like-minded people together there. I mean, I created this podcast in a cohort-based course in 2018. So I think that that's
Is that really Seth Godin's podcast workshop?
Yeah. The first course
I was guessing.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, he was very early on this cohort-based model. And I think he's worth mentioning because before I quit my job, like, and when I say conversation, I literal conversations, yes, but it's kind of like these questions, right? And Seth Godin was teeing up these questions. What I was seeing was a man I admired who was further along in the life path than me. And I was like, well, this is interesting. Could I live like that and feel so alive and energized and connected when I'm older? And the questions he asks are around, can we be more generous in our work and still succeed, right? Can we do bold things that might fail even after we've been successful? So questions like that are kind of like things I think about. So there's this literal conversation, and then there's these deeper like questions that are not going to disappear or be answered. You're just going to keep re-answering them and keep coming up with interesting things that are going to inform how you want to live your life.
Yeah. And speaking of questions, another thing that you've been doing, or speaking of conversations, another thing that you've been doing for a little while is these curiosity conversations. This ties into this idea around like how you've been designing your life and stuff. Talk to us a little bit about these conversations and why you were doing this and why you think either more people should or could, and the potential benefits of them to you.
So I don't think anyone should copy me. I think you should start with what you actually want to do and work from there, and your own psychology and goals and motivations and values. What I originally intended to do, and this was back in 2017, it was a little earlier too. I started sharing my writing on LinkedIn. I was still employed. I was in New York, and a couple people reached out to me And I had these in-person meetups and I met like exactly the person I wanted to meet. And it drove me crazy, right? Because there's this person in New York City that is there that shares like this deep curiosity. And I didn't know him or her. And I slowly started to meet these people and it was making my life better. Like, it's really fun. I love that. Like, I love ideas. I love exploring. I love imagining with other people. So in 2017, when I quit my job, I was like starting to write online. Like, very, very few people were reading this stuff. But some people were reaching out or stumbling upon it in different groups I was posting in. And these podcasts are all like, block your calendar. Don't let anyone access you. Optimize for work. And I was just like, that's stupid. Right? Because like, okay, what are you going to do? Just work your whole life? And I was like, all right, I'm going to pick a day and just have conversations with whoever the hell wants to schedule them with me. And this was kind of after I had dabbled in coaching a little and realized I really didn't want to double down on coaching. So I just put them up there. And I've had them up for 4 years, 4.5 years now. And people keep scheduling them. So I've probably had over 200 at this point from dozens of countries around the world, all different ages. I think the age range is probably 13 to 70 something. Exploring these questions that I'm throwing out there or attracted by ideas I'm writing about. And then during the pandemic, like, it was like an explosion. I was talking to like 5, 6, 7 people a week. It was so crazy. But the questions I had been asking for a few years at that point suddenly were connected to this broader conversation about work that was happening across the world.
Yeah. You mentioned that you didn't like coaching. Can you talk to us a little bit about, or you didn't want to double down on coaching. Can you talk to us about a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think, so I did career coaching in New York, and this was kind of my first beta test of this solo mode. I loved being challenged. I loved learning. But I was helping people make career changes. And what I was finding was I was attracting the kind of people that are like really want help and they're struggling in their job. They're like miserable, right? And they just want to escape that. And as soon as you get them a new job, they're like, all right, perfect, mission accomplished. They're very happy with you, but they don't really want to keep exploring any of these questions. And that's all I want to do, right? So I'm still happy to help people with careers. This is why I created like my resume course and just give that away for people and wrote a lot of like how I think about careers because I'll just send that to people. I don't want to coach people on that stuff. And I think also, like, the incentives of coaching are either to get a lot of clients or raise your rates tremendously, right? And the people I'm most interested in helping are the people behind me. And I don't care if they pay a lot. And if I've did a ton of different calls, I find that I just don't have the energy for that, right? So I do the curiosity conversations and those are fun, but typically that day I don't get much done because it does take a lot out of me.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of leaning back into coaching now. I'm finding this very interesting group, which is reaching out to me, which are these people who have done the default path, crushed it, have excess wealth, have reached this point in way earlier in their life than I expected. Like, the script tells them they have to work till 55, 60. They're looking around at 40 to 45 and saying, okay, what else? Like, I'm a senior VP or I'm a director and I don't want to be VP. So what's my exit plan? So I'm starting to work with some of these people and starting to lean into coaching. I think it's probably going to be a hybrid cohort-based coaching approach with this. Basically, like you said before, it's just more fun and everyone gets way more out of it because it's not just my voice, it's 5 other people or 6 other people or something like that.
Yeah, cool, exciting. The if somebody agrees with the pathless path, what is like one thing that you think they could do? Like, what is, someone says, Paul speaking my language, like, oh, like, yes, 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 but they don't know where to start.
Well, this is why I'm writing the book, right?
But one thing.
So, yeah. So I think the pathless path often starts for people before they are aware they are on it. And Andrew Taggart, he's a philosopher. He talks about our relationship with work, and he offers two perspectives or two paths, two like on-ramps. One is the way of loss and one is the way of wonderment. Way of loss is losing somebody that's important in your life. It's losing a job. It's losing an identity you were attached to. It's a health crisis, right? And this often shakes people's reality, opens them up to ideas and questions, right? The second one is kind of the way of wonderment. It's kind of this leaning into possibility. Maybe you make a new friend and you're like, oh my God, there's all these things I didn't imagine, right? You might travel somewhere. This is like one of the most foolproof things to like incite your own existential crisis that doesn't rock your world. Go live somewhere for a couple weeks and don't travel like a tourist. Just settle in a local Airbnb, go to the supermarket, cook your own food, and just experience like what it's like to be in a different place, right? Talk to locals, talk to expats, talk to nomads, talk to people outside your bubble, and see like what clues they have to offer you, right? So, and this is mostly for people that are already open to that. I don't want to change anyone's mind to get them onto this path, but there's enough people out there that I do care about and I do want to write towards who are have these either like discomfort, disconnects, or this deeper curiosity, and they're like, what the hell do I do with this? And yeah, so there is one cool I'll pause there for a second, and I have one exercise I often give people that helps.
Yeah, let's hear the exercise.
So it's called the best self exercise. You basically just email 3 to 4 friends and you say, hey, I'm doing an exercise for this. You can blame me and say, just give people a reason. Doesn't matter. For Paul, this guy's Paul's prompt. When have you seen me at my best self? And the answers you'll get back will surprise pretty much anyone, because there are things you know, but you forget to notice how important they are to you, right? It might be your generosity or how much you care or how you're there when people help or how passionate you are about something, right? We have these stories we tell about ourselves. I am this way and I have to be this way because of this. And these are often our own kind of like rationalizations for things we do like and don't like. And they're complicated stories. And like a good friend will just get to the heart of it. It's like, you're more generous than anyone I know. You're the greatest friend I know. And you're like, damn. And then what you do with that, that's up to you. And to me, that's what the pathless path is about, is kind of like create your own story. Figure out where that takes you and what to do next.
And so that's the close, your close friends, but then clear, you can gather additional data points through writing online, curiosity calls, etc. So you mentioned, you know, you were living in New York, working in consulting, and then you kind of veered off. Was there any other kind of turning moments? You mentioned Seth Godin's work. Is there anything else that kind of shifted your perspective and started to going deeper on this?
This is the question that made me want to write this book, because people tell stories of how they make these shifts in their life, and they leave out 99% of what really happened, right? And my book might be a little painful in that I draw this out in like excruciating detail. I try to make it like light and fun to read along the way. But there is no one moment. I have a story I've probably told that I could tell you and would be convincing. But it tricks people into thinking it's about these bold moments of courage. And they're not. It's, for me, I left my job in 2017, but the cracks started showing. I mean, there's evidence of cracks in my disconnect with that path from when I was young, right? We just forget who we are as a kid. And then losing my grandfather and starting to think about like the end of my life, and then a health crisis after grad school. And then a year or two of like being in and out of work and kind of losing this successful person identity and having to sit and prioritize my health and figure out what's important. And then it was when I recovered, it was these emergent experiments that were disconnected from my job. So I'm running around in New York doing these group coaching things, coaching experiments, volunteering, engaging with everything, like volunteering in this like 2-year mentorship program. It was like, love this stuff. And then like I hated my job. I was working for like senior leaders of companies, helping them with like succession planning, board strategy, CEO transitions. And it was like, these people, they're not in my conversation, right? They're in other people's conversation. And then even after like realizing that, my imagination is still not expanded to be like, I'm doing all these things inside. Like maybe I could work on my own. No, it was like turning down, like getting offered a lower salary to a job I thought I liked. And it was like basically having this burnout moment where I just snapped and told my boss, like, I think it's time to go. And then realizing, holy crap, I just quit my job. And then when I became a freelancer, because that was my only idea of when I left my job, like realizing, wow, this is really hard. My first 2 months not having any money coming in and like being in New York and like facing financial insecurity, and then like finally landing some clients and then getting the space in my life on the side of that, and then realize, oh my God, I just want to write and like create and connect with people. Like, is that a thing I can do? So much shame around that. Are you allowed to do that? What if I just lean into that mode of life? Even if everyone in my life is telling me I'm making bad decisions or like that feels terrible, what if? And that's kind of what I leaned into. So like people are like, I want to quit my job and become a course creator. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
I know how to help you go on a journey. I know how to ask questions. I know how to help you reframe different ways of thinking about your relationship with work. But I don't know how to give you a playbook. And I wrote the Pathless Path for the people that can live in uncertainty and poetry and in dreams, rather than wanting a step-by-step playbook for how to quit your job and make $1 million. Because I don't know how to do that. Maybe one day.
Yeah. And do you think that, do you think if the path that you're on seems, you know, or causes questions or causes pushback or causes raised eyebrow, does that mean that, do you think that means that you're onto something? If people can't understand why you're doing something or think it's weird or think it's odd, do you think that's a signal that, you know, if it's something that you're passionate about, something you're interested in, you think that is closer to that best self, et cetera. Do you think that that's...
I think it's still very easy to delude ourselves, right? So I think if you're on to something, you can be right and other people can be warning you of things they're right about too, right? And they may be speaking a different language. I think the trap in leaving the default path behind is that you become in opposition to it. And I definitely fell into this at the beginning. And when people start challenging you, you realize what they're doing is trying to make sense of their own life. Or they're really uncomfortable with what you're doing because they don't think you're a good person if you're not working in a full-time job, right? And the trap there is to double down and defend and try to convince people. And I did this a little too much in my first few years. What I learned, what I know now, is I should have slowed down and said, like, yeah, like I actually am scared of these things. And it's hard. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm afraid that I'm wrong, but I do think I'm on to something that might make my life like worth living. And I'm really trying to lean into that now and be less like confrontational, and really try to just share like where I am. And if people don't see where you are, that's fine, right? I think like the trap of needing to be right about your path arises out of the massive uncertainty that comes from being on an uncertain path, right? So the trap is to leave the default path and then double down on like, I'm a digital nomad, or I am a VC-backed founder. Like, we crave these stories, right? And there's a certain practicality. Like, give your parents a story that they can tell their friends. Don't tell them you're a curious human who's wandering around and exploring a broader conversation with the world. Tell them that, like, you're a freelancer and entrepreneur. They can tell their friends, and, like, you don't need to change their mind.
Any other ideas or perspectives to kind of freelancers or indies? Some of your recent writing, I think, has been around, like, the more people are in this game or playing this, then the better it is for all of us. It seems like technology is kind of, you know, some of the tooling and stuff like that is improving. Given your perspective on this, and is there anything else that you think people should know about?
Yeah, I'm biased. So I think we're in this virtuous cycle where the more people join, the more options and the more fun will emerge. And the more people that enter, the more tools that get created, the more like optionality for like working together, right? So I want more people to join this game because I want to stay in this game. Like Packy McCormick calls it the great online game. And he was playing this game before he like founded this big newsletter business. He was basically like, the first time I met him, we did like this talk on hosting online sessions at lunch for no reason other than like, he was just curious human wanting to like screw around with people on the internet. And I loved that energy. And I think it's cool. And I do think the possibilities are going to be really interesting. I don't really know what direction they're going to be or like what my life will look like. But it seems interesting. I think the economics excite me less than the social possibilities. And I think the things that bring me alive are probably not the things that are going to make me like very rich. I think I'll be able to sustain myself pretty comfortably now, but like, I really want to help people make sense of these journeys, and it mostly for free. So I'm going to keep writing about this. I'm going to keep having conversations and helping people about this stuff. And it gives me a lot of meaning and joy, and I feel very connected to something bigger than me. And that's what it's all about.
Hell yeah. It's interesting. The things that bring us money are often not the things that give us meaning. And the things that give us meaning are often the things that don't give us money. It's an interesting mix.
Yeah, and you have to battle your emotions, right? It becomes very easy to become envious. I think, lucky for me, I did do some of the, like, success path and made good money before I started this. I make far less now than I did before. And I still, like, I look at some of my business school classmates and I realize they've been at Amazon for 10 years. And you can just kind of, like, do the math and, like, count up all the stock options they have and, like, realize how financially well off they are. Like, it makes you feel like a goddamn fool. However, like, I keep having to come back to, like, I'm playing this game. I'm gonna try and play it. I'm still sustaining my life. I don't seem to be doing harm to people, so I'm gonna see where it takes me. And that's really fun and exciting for me. And similarly, I see people, like, I saw today, like, somebody's launching this course for, like, 2000 was the entry-level cohort-based course package. And I'm like, oh my God, am I stupid for like running this evergreen course and not wanting to like build a business? But then I just realized like, that's not my game. Like, if I need to do that, I can go do that. But yeah, my game is like staying in my like zone of the things that are gonna wanna make me keep playing the game, right? The work of your life is to find the work you want to keep on doing.
Yeah, I love that. All right, well, Paul, well, this is an incredible conversation. Obviously, we've talked for a lot longer, and I can't wait for the next conversations. But in the meantime, please let listeners know where they can learn more about the Pathless Path and other ways that they can connect, maybe even have a curiosity conversation with you.
Yeah, think-boundless.com. Or P_Millard, M-I-L-L-E-R-D on Twitter. I'm really easy to find. I'm the only Paul Millard with a web presence. So
awesome. Thanks so much, Paul.
Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.